Hello and welcome to episode 97 of Must See Matches, the essentials of pro wrestling as nominated by you. I am Kieran Lefort and joining me as always, the millennium hand to my shrimp, Mark Buckledy. Mark, how's it going?
I'm good, thank you.
Tremendous. This week, and for 1 week only, we are in a new bracket of percentage of nominations. I need a better way to describe that. This match is the only one that scored 18.75% of nominations and stands as the eighth most must-see match, according to our audience. It is also our final trip to TNA Wrestling. Samoa Joe versus Christopher Daniels versus AJ Styles from Unbreakable, September the 11th, 2005. And we have got the only person we could possibly have to come and talk about this match, well, apart from maybe one of the people in it, the walking encyclopedia of TNA and the host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me, Garrett Kidney. Garrett, how you doing?
Hello, friends. If you look at the Wrestling Observer, in the months after this match, Dave would refer to this match as the 9/11 three-way.
Yes.
I'm like, Dave, you can't do that. Dave, you cannot be doing that. That's just unacceptable.
Like, the whole Unbreakable name was like, it was to pay tribute to the unbreakable spirit of the American people on September the 11th, wasn't it?
Yeah, they put that little card at the start of the pay-per-view as well.
Yeah. And then that they don't reuse the name until, is it 2019?
I was almost upset that, like, Unbreakable had this reverent thing. You know, it was the one show that had the widely accepted best match in TNA history. It was never gone back to. And it was just, like, thrown out for a nothing Impact Plus special in 2019. It was because of, like, Unbreakable Michael Elgin. That was where Unbreakable came from then.
Oh, God. So for the worst reasons, it was brought back.
For the worst reason imaginable, it was brought back. I was like, oh, it should have been a moment bringing back Unbreakable, but it's just a thing for Michael Elgin.
The man who used to call himself Big Mike, and then the first time I saw him live, this little man walked out through the curtain, and I pissed myself laughing, because a man who is 5'8" should not be calling himself Big anything. Anyway, let's move swiftly away from that man to three much better men. I have a question I need to ask Mark every week. Mark, when did you first see this match?
2005.
Excellent, good. Correct answer. Garrett, I assume it's the same for you?
No, I didn't start watching TNA properly until, like, late 06. So I was seeing this probably for the first time in 2007.
Okay. Well, I think, Mark, would have this been like a Wrestling Channel thing for you?
Must have been.
Yeah, I was trying to work it out. I had previously found a page that basically detailed all the ins and outs with TNA on the Wrestling Channel, because they started way behind with catch-ups, and they got to the point where they were showing the new episodes of Impact like 2 days after they aired in the US, which was amazing at the time. I think it was a shorter gap between Impact airing in the US and airing on the Wrestling Channel than Raw airing in the US and airing on Sky Sports.
Wouldn't surprise me. The crazy thing for me in TNA is somehow TNA is a promotion that I was aware of and following before it actually had its first show. Like, I remember going on wrestling message boards, like, after WCW went down, and reading rumors about this Jeff Jarrett starting something up. So, and bear in mind, I was less than 2 years into being a wrestling fan at that point.
Yes. Yeah.
I needed my AJ Styles fix after seeing him in an US Air Force jumpsuit in WCW.
You brought this up last time we recorded with Garrett. I was trying to think, when was the first time I saw all of these people? I think Joe would have been the one I saw last, because I had been to FWA British Uprising and seen AJ Styles live in 2002. And then Daniels had been in the promotion already, but came back for shows in 2003.
Yeah.
And then all three of them were on Frontiers of Honor, which I worked at.
Oh, okay.
But I'm trying to remember when I would have seen them all on TV, and it probably, well, not TV, like, it would have been Ring of Honor VHSs, and I had the VHSs, bootleg VHSs, please don't kill me, Garrett, of the first few NWA TNA weekly pay-per-views, which Joe wouldn't have been.
This podcast is actually entrapment. Did you get to admit to things like that and then take you to jail?
It was the only way to get hold of it in this country. at the time.
Because I would have watched like little wrestling channel bits and bobs. Mm. And anytime I watched, it was always like, because it was Asylum era TNA, so like 76% of it was absolutely dog shit. So like, I would, every time I turn it on, it would be like Glenn Gilberti or the Dup Cup. And I'd be like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. So it wasn't until like I started watching properly at the end of 06, watching on Bravo. I guess like the Best of the X Division Volume 2 DVD is when I would have seen these three men most. That's because they are all, there's like a little mini doc on that rivalry, on this rivalry on that DVD. There's like a 30 minute where they, it's in character for the most part, but it's like a fun breakdown of their rivalry. So that's probably where I would have seen these guys most, because I didn't have the channels for WCW or WWF growing up, but some of my family did, so I would have watched some WWF tapes and pay-per-views, and that was my route in before we got the relevant television channels to actually be able to watch wrestling in our house.
Like you saying about the mini doc and like that Best of the X Division DVD makes me think like this match and this rivalry didn't just put the X Division and these three men on the map. Like this kind of made TNA a must watch product as well, I would think. Like people aren't, as much as they would like to think it was, people weren't necessarily tuning in for Jeff Jarrett versus Rhino.
I think you can go a step deeper. You can talk about like, when did this style of wrestling actually break through as like the mainstream style of wrestling?
Yes, like this is, I was thinking about it while watching the match, like this was independent wrestling but on a mainstream wrestling pay-per-view.
Because, like, obviously, this stuff was happening in Ring of Honor beforehand, but for, a niche, small audience. And, like, you can argue, obviously, like, WCW and the Cruiserweights was where a lot of people noticed it was really good, but, like, they never, ever, ever, ever sniffed being in main events in WCW. No. Like, not even as, like, on an experimental basis. Not even, like, headlining a Nitro every now and again. Cruiserweights never even got that much in WCW. And, like, you could say, obviously, the year before is when, like, Benoit and Eddie won the belts in WWE. So that's when that kind of guy began getting their due. But like this is like another step in the evolution of like this is this kind of cruiserweight style that grew in WCW and evolved into what Ring of Honor and the Indies made it, actually being presented on a main event stage for like realistically kind of the first time.
Yeah, two things. Benoit and Eddie getting their due is the previous, not, I guess they're the previous generation of independent guy finally being in the main event. These are current independent pro wrestlers in the main event of a pay-per-view. Yeah, this went on last on this show. And I forgot what the other thing was. It might just be that this went on last. But yeah, like this was an important step, I think, for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, and even if you go to Benoit and Eddie, they still had to be in the ring with Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Brock Lesnar, Kurt Angle. You know, it wasn't Benoit against Eddie. It was like the established WWE stars and then Benoit and Eddie getting a chance with them.
Pumped full of steroids to fit in, having to tone down their styles to fit in with the company. Like, this match is three guys getting to be themselves for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
On the top of a pay-per-view. Mark, we've covered all three guys before, but I don't know if you want to run through like the number of nominations and stuff they all had and that kind of thing. The number of nominations TNA had as well, actually, given this is the last one.
TNA had 17 nominations. Mm-hmm. This is, of course, the third of and the last TNA match we'll cover on the podcast. Weirdly enough, I've got Florida stats. So this is our seventh match on that we've covered on the podcast from Florida. And Florida have more nominations than TNA, Samoa Joe, Chris Daniels, and AJ Styles combined.
Florida are the best wrestler in wrestling history.
Yeah, and it is Florida, not Flo Rida.
Who is one of the worst things to ever appear on a wrestling pay-per-view.
Yep. So AJ, this is the third show that we've covered AJ. He had 15 nominations, the most of everyone in this. Samoa Joe, it's his fourth appearance on the podcast. He had 13 nominations. All of his nominated matches were during that 2000, sorry, not nominated. All of his podcast matches were during that 2004-2005 Samoa Joe peak. Chris Daniels had six matches nominated. This is the second. Of course, his first one was the America's Most Wanted versus Triple X cage match.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
The interesting thing about this match is it's not just the match thrown out to be three dudes having an X Division title match. It's like actually like the culmination of a year-long build for the most part, because like Styles and Daniels had been the rivalry at the start of the year. Then Joe came in as like the dominant force, and then they would pivot back off into Styles and Daniels in October and Styles and Joe in December, and then come back around to the three-way in 2006. So like it wasn't just like we're gonna throw our three best wrestlers in a match and see what happens. It was actually like the culmination of like a year of build around the X Division.
Yeah, it was, but watching the final month, it was sort of built and sort of wasn't. So the first episode I watched was the August 19th Impact, and we're shown that at Sacrifice the previous weekend, X Division champion Chris Daniels interfered in the Super X Cup final, costing AJ the win and giving it to Joe. And we're told that he must now face Joe at Unbreakable. We get Samoa Joe versus Jarrell Clark. I discovered that Jarrell is a name my iPad does not like and tried to correct it to many different things.
It takes a while, yeah.
Yeah, you got to train it.
Apollo with two L's. Like a single L Apollo, it does not like. It's always, it's two L's.
Yep. Oh, the one it always does for me is when I write Kensuke Sasaki, it changes Kensuke to censure.
Oh, my favorite run. Nick Aldis always autocorrects to Nick Aldis. Yeah. Or cases the L. Fantastic.
Brilliant starts this match. Clark leg dives Joe, who just sprawls on top of him and doesn't move. Clark gets a couple of chops in and a leg lariat, but Joe nopes the moonsault body block and hits him with a senton that looked like it could kill a scorpion in a 5x5 room. Clark hits a dropkick, but springboards directly into an uranage muscle buster kakina clutch, and he is done. Daniels hits the ring immediately and blindsides Joe with the belt. Joe's like, the fuck was that? Like, he just got tapped on the back of the head by a child. Daniels tries it again, and Joe's like, oh no, something actually did hit me. Turns around, gets put in the angel's wings, but backdrops his way out as AJ hits the ring. There is a brief scuffle between Styles and Daniels. Joe clotheslines Daniels, and AJ hits a dropkick on both of them to clear the ring, and he's the one left standing tall with his music playing. Other things catch my eye as I go through these shows. I noticed the first team out for the Chris Candido Memorial Cup was Simon Diamond and Mikey Batts. Drinking. I skipped very quickly.
How dare you? You watched Jarrell Clark, but not Mikey Batts?
I watched Samoa Joe. Jarrell Clark just happened to be in the ring at the same time.
Are you saying that All-Irish Patrick Kenny is deserved of Kieran's time?
Oh, well, maybe not in 2004.
Irish Patrick Kenny isn't. TNA-era Simon Diamond, maybe.
No, he's still not.
ECW Simon Diamond was my guy, mostly because of that cracking theme song he had. This is also the first time I noticed that Diamond's logo looks almost exactly like the Scooby-Doo logo.
He would be better off if he was a Scooby-Doo character, frankly.
Impact, August the 26th. Sean Waltman and Alex Shelley versus The Abyss and Shark Boy, and I was very disappointed that the latter team didn't have a double team called Shark Treatment or last longer than this one match. Backstage interviewer Shane Douglas interviews Commissioner Larry Zbysko about the plans for the tag title at Unbreakable. It's a four-way elimination match, in case you're interested. And then Christopher Daniels barges into the office. I love this. Like, he puts his arm around Larry, he butters him up a bit, and he says because he's the X Division champion, he's obviously the most important thing in TNA, especially when it comes to the upcoming move to Spike TV. That is something that he's pushed a lot across this month of television. So he's like, you know, because I am the face of this division and therefore the face of the company, things need to go smoothly for me. And he says he's scheduled to defend the title against Joe at the pay-per-view, but Larry must have seen Styles attack him last week. And then he starts getting angry. He's like, how am I supposed to be at my best if I'm always looking over my shoulder for AJ Styles? He says, I want AJ fined, suspended, arrested, or chained to a radiator in the basement. And he's getting more and more het up and aggressive as this goes on. And he's like poking Larry in the chest and like smacking him on the shoulder and stuff. And he says, if it wasn't for Chris Daniels, Larry Zbysko would be on the championship committee of a softball league. So what is he going to do to keep AJ away from him and Unbreakable? And Larry says he subscribes to the keep it simple, stupid philosophy and says he knows a lot of the younger wrestlers like Daniels, who's 35 here, not 33, as Mike Tenay tries to kayfabe it at the pay-per-view. Says the younger wrestlers think he's old and out of touch, but he's starting to catch on to this new generation. And he says, if you can't keep a madman out, let him in and see what happens. So at the pay-per-view, it will in fact be a three-way match for Daniels' title, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, and Christopher Daniels. And then he leaves to work on his putting game, and franchise cackles at Daniel's misfortune.
Larry Z, he was only like authority figure there for like a year, but like he was so good in that role, because like this is one of my favorite archetypes for heels, which is like they get what they want but not in the way they want it.
Yes,
it's like they come demanding, it's like, this is what I'd like, and then Larry's like, oh, you can have it, but it screws you over, and it's great. And Larry has this like exasperated energy where he's like fed up of anybody who ever asks him for anything. He's like furious. It's really good.
Yeah, I mean, I will take this over Larry Zbysko the wrestler and Larry Zbysko the Nitro commentator.
Mm.
And especially Larry Zbysko the Thunder commentator, which was even worse. The only other thing on this show that caught my eye was Jeff Hardy doing a short promo entirely upside down. Impact, September the 2nd, Waltman and Shelley versus Hoyt and Conan. All I saw was Conan walking the ropes for a clothesline double down spot, and I thought, Jesus Christ, and hit fast forward. He was dreadful.
That man should, like, he was literally physically incapable of moving at this point. He should not have been wrestling.
Dressed like he'd fallen out of a branch of Oxfam. He was an absolute state. We get Christopher Daniels with his Beautiful People knockoff theme versus Shark Boy. Really fun little TV match, super simple, but like everything is perfectly executed.
Well, it's got Shark Boy in it, of course.
Absolutely. Sharky out wrestles Daniels early, but the champ pulls the fin to get the advantage, which made me laugh. Daniels gets backdropped out to the floor and hit with a plunger, but kicks the bottom rope into Shark Boy's face as he rolls back into the ring and beats on him. Sharky makes a comeback with clotheslines and a neck break, but Daniels swats away a top rope dropkick, tells him he's going to kill him, and hits the best moonsault ever. But Shark Boy kicks out of the best moonsault ever. High-pitched screams from the ladies in the crowd mean AJ Styles is coming down the ramp, prompting Daniels to release Shark Boy from the Angel's wings. Daniels goes over to remonstrate with Styles, presumably about his stripy popped collar polo shirt. And when he turns his attention back to Shark Boy, Sharky traps him in a small package for the pin. Styles laughs, Daniels throws a tantrum, and I particularly liked Daniels hurts his foot kicking the turnbuckle in anger. September the 9th. These shows go very quickly when you fast forward through all the Simon Diamond. A match I had to stop and watch simply because of the names in it. Chris Sabin and Shocker versus Sean Waltman and Alex Shelley. My 2005 indie / lucha brain kicked in and I was like, okay, I need to see what happens here. The only thing I really noticed was that Sabin and Shelley have such amazing chemistry in everything they do, whether they're on the same side of the ring or opposing each other.
It's almost like they should team or something at this point.
Yeah, funny that. Very funny to me that Shocker has almost Masato Yoshino-esque tights and throws in a couple of Shima moves and mannerisms. So you know what he's watching on the tour bus. Like TNA had a tour bus at this time. The other thing I noted, Monty Brown continues to be a complete star. We mentioned this the last time Garrett came on and how they should have pulled the trigger on him way before this. He's just like making everybody else like half asleep on the microphone.
His pay-per-view match is Monty and Kip James versus Apollo and Lance Hoyt. Like that's what the promo you're talking about is building toward.
Yes.
Which is just like, what are you doing? That man challenged for the world title and should have won in January. And by the time you get to September, he's on his like, I think, third straight month of teaming with Kip James on pay-per-view. It's like, what on earth has happened? What has gone wrong?
They were trying to make him leave, I'm sure.
I think his contract was like in flux for a lot of the year, which is the reason he was around without doing anything important. But still, he's Monty Brown.
It's 2006 where he jumps and he's Count Marquis Von Kor, isn't he?
Yeah, through August. Yeah, August 06, I think, is when he's done.
Isn't it Marquis Corvon?
It's an old Brian Alvarez joke. Like, he could never get the name right and started calling him Count Marquis Von Kor.
Oh, anything Brian Alvarez, I'm just not going to get.
Fair enough. We get a Chris Daniels interview saying this is the most important time in TNA's short history and fans want to know who will step up and be the company's shining light. He lifts off guitar-carrying trickster Jeff Jarrett, Monty Brown, Rhino, the moral reprobate Raven, and asks if it will be any of them. He said, it is him, and now more than ever, he is Mr. TNA. He says, my heart has six sides and eternally beats TNA, TNA, TNA. He asks Styles and Joe if they truly believe they have what it takes to curb his desire, bend his will, or break his spirit, and says on September the 11th, he will show everyone that his will, his desire, and his spirit are unbreakable. This might have worked better without Shane Douglas in a bright yellow polo shirt leaning over his shoulder, holding the microphone and making confused faces. This was tremendous. And listening to the wording of it, all Daniels would have to do is tone down the delivery and it would work perfectly as a babyface promo as well.
Yeah, you just reading it out, considering I'd not watched it, I'm thinking, well, yeah, this is a really good babyface promo.
Yeah, but the way he's delivering this is like spitting all over the place and gesticulating wildly at the camera and like really throwing himself into it.
Yeah, the idea is that he's egomaniacally being like, I am the one who should be the face of the Spike TV revolution. It might be the best promo of Daniel's career, if I'm honest. Like this little 3-minute thing backstage with Franchise. Mm. Like Daniel's isn't known for a promo guy, even though he does some fantastic character stuff in 2005. Like he's really, really good as a character at this point, especially when, like, they throw him on commentary borderline every week with Mike and Don.
Yes.
And like Mike hates him. He's like, he always calls Mike's name Michael. And Mike is like, shut up, would you leave me alone? Greg Kevin, he's really good, really sharp on, he should be a color commentator. I always thought when he retired, he should move into color commentary. And sadly, it has yet to happen, though there's still time. But yeah, this is like your here's 3 minutes, sell this pay-per-view match. And he did about as good a job as you could ask of somebody.
Mm. I was going to kind of bring this up towards the end, but you mentioning how like Daniels is still not a commentator. I don't watch WWE. But I have seen two of the three men in this match from 2005 wrestle on television within the past week. And actually, I watched the Royal Rumble. So like, I have seen all three of these men wrestle in this past year so far. And we're only at the beginning of March.
And shockingly, Joe is the best of them now? How'd that happen?
Yeah.
There was that whole decade where he was the worst of them. And now he's the best of them.
Well, he was a bit sweaty and blown up at the pay-per-view, I think. Where he is not sweaty and blown up is in his match against Shark Boy. Sharky plays stick and move to get some early hits in, but runs into a Manhattan drop and a flying gum and geary. He blocks the face watch and bites Joe's foot and then his head. But Joe whips him with this turbo power slam, muscle buster, Kikina clutch for the win in just 92 seconds. Tremendous fun squash. Loved it.
Joe TV squashes are the best. You should actually make a compilation of just Joe TV squashes, which is just him wrecking people over and over again. It's so good.
Unless they're his mate and he wants to give them a job.
Yeah, Jay Lethal, he will give them a back and forth competitive match to for some reason.
Yeah. And the only other thing on this show that caught my eye, again, it was one of those ones where I saw the name and I had to press play. The main event is Abyss and Rhino versus Raven and Sabu. And I howled when Sabu started his hot tag by just fucking clobbering Abyss with a chair right in front of the referee.
It's so good. There's no DQs in this company. Who cares?
No. I don't even know how this ended. Like, it was just like violence and chairs being thrown around and brawling all over the place. Very, very silly. And so we come to Unbreakable on September the 11th. I liked AJ Styles walking through his pyro. That's why he wears the big hood. Finally, we have discovered it's so he can walk under that Christian style. I don't want to call it a golden shower, but it is.
It's raining voltage.
Raining voltage.
I'm so sorry, Christian. It's voltage.
Oh, okay.
That was what Christian always said. It's raining voltage as he walked through his pyro.
I see. One of the other things I love about the entrance is I always like shots from behind wrestlers on their entrances. Mm. So like Christopher Daniels gets his here and he's framed in that tunnel with like the ramp and the ring and all the crowd in front of him. Looks very cool.
Yeah, as we record this today, not to date it, but this is when AEW revealed they're bringing back the tunnels. They should bring back that shot of coming, especially like Powerhouse Hobbs does the from behind shot already. From behind through the tunnel, do that.
Yes. Yeah. I mentioned that Daniels is 35. AJ Styles is 28 here. Samoa Joe is a whopping 26 years old.
Jesus.
Yes. And we've already talked about the 2004 into 2005 that Joe has had. Something that didn't reflect too well on the booking. TNA has only been around for 3 years, but Styles is announced at having already won all the titles twice.
Yeah, he won them all within the first year of the company. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do like how prestigious they made this feel. It's the most decorated athlete in company history versus the longest reigning champion versus the guy who is yet to be beaten.
and Joe has come in as like the marauding newcomer who has killed Sanjay and he's killed AJ and he's killed Saban. He's run through the X Division. Like, he is the guy who is now standing at the gates of the X Division title. And it's like the two defining faces of the X Division. As he said, longest reigning champion, most reigns at this point. I think AJ's on four at this point. As the two guys standing against Joe to try and stop him from winning the X Division title.
And in the ring, they each do a great job of kind of emphasizing one aspect. So Joe is the power, AJ is the athleticism, Chris Daniels is the cunning.
And it
just does a really good job of keeping this. Everyone is different for a different reason.
Because these three are like defined characters, you know. They're, as again, to go back, the criticism you'd always have thrown a lot of the time in bad faith against wrestling like this is it's just moves. Whereas like these three men are really defined characters, as Joe the Unstoppable Monster, Daniel's the wily heel, and Styles like the blue chip babyface, as those three real like central pro wrestling characters, timeless pro wrestling characters that you can play like seven different character dynamics. And they do, like, there's a bunch of fun character dynamic stuff in this match, and I think it's the kind of thing that gets lost when you talk about wrestling like this, which has like really impressive moves and really impressive sequences. It's like the underpinning of it all is character, and that's what kind of makes it a step above like a great indie match between three guys like this.
It's the same as when we talked about the Toriumon four-way trios match. Like, yes, that is lots of fast-paced exciting moves, but there is a thread of story running all the way through that match. Everybody gets to show off their character, and there is, as we discussed on the episode, like, it's a pivotal match in the history of the promotion as a whole, much like this is here. The character stuff also here starts at the bell. Like, Daniels is yelling to the others that it's his belt, they'll never get it, and he's Mr. TNA, and they just run over and kick the shit out of him.
Yeah, they kick him like three or four or five times. He stands up, he's like, stop kicking me, and then they kick him again. It's so good.
Yeah, the competition over who can kick him harder was very fun. So the champ's out of the way. AJ tries for the quick win with a series of cradles on Joe, but Joe turns the last one into a double arm lock. And then, with the aid of a ring post and a moving camera, Christopher Daniels teleports back into the ring to break it up.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've watched this about seven or eight times, and I still can't bloody get how the hell he gets in there.
It was perfect placement. The camera goes around the ring post where there are also two photographers, and I think he must have slid in and stood up at exactly the right time to be completely masked by the things passing in front of the camera. Because last I knew, he was on the floor the other side, and then all of a sudden he's stamping on Joe to break up this hold.
Because if that's not the case, then the reason that he's director of talent spotting for AEW is because they don't need to pay him airfare.
The Fallen Angel puts a little beating on AJ, but Joe hoofs him outside. Daniels trips Joe as he runs the ropes and then comes back in with a combination, what I call a combination bulldog / poorly filmed kick, because you didn't see him take off and you didn't see him hit it, but Joe fell over anyway.
When you actually look at it closely, it is quite impressive that he does that kick, and he actually spins all the way over the other side for the bulldog.
Yes,
it's actually quite really well executed for how badly it was shot.
Joe beats them both up for a bit. Daniels then comes back with an attempt at the bulldog and lariat combo, but AJ shoves him off into Joe's uranage. Styles runs wild a bit with flying forearms until Joe simply catches him and belly to bellies him over the head into a corner. Over his head into the corner. Over anybody's head. Doesn't matter whose head. Daniels then effectively pounces Joe to stop him face-washing AJ, knocks him down with a drop kick through the ropes and his Arabian moonsault. Never to be outdone when it comes to dives, Styles then takes both of them down with a springboard shooting star to the floor.
What I love with this, and another dive later on, they do a fantastic job of giving you a lot and kind of giving you a bit of misdirection before the dive, and also explaining why these two guys are in a position to be dove upon. And it's just really clever, simple, basic wrestling of like, okay, we're going for a dive on both people. So what do we do to get in a position where that makes logical sense?
Yes.
And still look spectacular, because this is what springboard shooting star press. AJ wasn't doing many of these a few years after this.
No, I mean, I've seen him do it during the WCW run, and I've seen a few on TNA shows. But yeah, he's not doing this like at WrestleMania, I don't think.
No, he did one in the Asylum, and the most recent one I can remember him doing is Slammiversary 2012 in the Angle and Styles against Daniels and Kazarian match. He did one in that as well. So it is a very much a sometimes food for AJ, and I'd imagine he probably can't do it now. He might die.
Yeah. Did you know Gretchen Wilson's All Jacked Up is out on CD and Jewel Desk, whatever the fuck one of those is, on September the 27th.
But that album has gotten like undue advertising due to happening to sponsor this wrestling yes. match.
I'm not lying. I had to work out who the hell she was. It's like, what is this?
I imagine it's some sort of conservative country singer. They usually are when they advertise on TNA aprons. What was the one where, was it the AJ Abyss match where we kept getting like Larry the Cable Guy ads?
Yeah, I think one of his comedy albums was a sponsor of TNA for a while, yes. Yeah.
So Styles and Joe go back in where AJ gets a two count for his drop down leapfrog dropkick, and commentary makes a very valid point that he must have hit Joe with some force to knock down a man that size running towards him and send him back the other way.
Also, Joe was not making that easy for AJ because he was going at a hell of a clip and AJ hit it comfortably.
Yes. Daniels comes back in, and in the spot of the match, Joe reverses a Daniels whip. So Daniels monkey flip Styles out of the corner straight into a Hurricane Rana on Joe. And then the cherry on the top is professional wrestler Christopher Daniels, who had his back to the latter half of this, turning around, seeing everybody else on the ground and being like, how the hell did that happen?
It's so good. He's so confused about what just happened, because like he monkey flipped Styles and suddenly everyone is dead and he's just like, what on earth happened between the monkey flip and him landing?
Yeah. And they give that moment time to breathe. They give it time to sink in. Everyone gathers their head and they come back again. I don't know if this was a spot where Joe did a lovely kind of bounce and landed into the ropes as well, which...
Mm.
I don't know if it was this spot or a later one, but yeah, it's a nice example of you go all out and then you give it a little bit of time to breathe and then you go back.
Well, giving it a chance to breathe gives the crowd a chance to chant TNA. Mm. Daniels kicks Styles off an O'Connor roll and hurls him over the top rope.
The bump AJ takes for that is so unnecessary. Like, he did not need to do that. Like, he goes, like, literally, like, 3 feet above the ring and comes just crashing down chest first for just being, like, backdropped over the ropes. He could have just taken a normal bump, like a normal human being. But, like, I'm a stupid pro wrestler and I'm taking the dumbest bump imaginable.
And it's one of those classic just disappear into nothing. You don't even see the landing.
Yeah, you talked about his pilot suit earlier. Like, he looked like he was doing a parachute jump the way he falls. The champ hits a flying knee on Joe and then pokes the bear by slapping Joe around the head. And the bear responds by just beating him up. Daniels escapes the battering and uses his own O'Connor roll, but Joe flips him into the coquina clutch. AJ breaks this up with the fucking spiral tap.
Of course. How else? Actually, if you watched the three-way at Revolution, Swerve breaks up a coquina clutch with a spiral tap.
He did, yes. He did.
I'm not sure was that a direct callback, but it was fun to watch. It's like, oh, look at that.
This one looked painful for everyone. On the slow motion replay, you can see Joe is on the bottom, so he's getting the weight of two men. Daniels gets sandwiched, and poor AJ looks like he gets Joe's knee, like, right in his gooch. It just looks horrible for all concerned.
And also, the spiral tap is a move where you get the final rotation just before you land.
Yeah.
So, of course, you do it on top of two people, so you've got 6 inches less room to do it.
Styles tries to pin both guys, but Daniels flings him outside and hits the downward spiral on Joe. He goes up for the BME, but AJ comes back in and he just punches him in the butt to stop him. Daniels gets Tree of Woad, and both opponents batter him. The crowd chant, "This is awesome," and Tanae's like, "You are damn right, this is awesome."
Mike and Don are so goddamn good in this match.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's my pet peeve with a lot of announcers, even pretty good ones, is like, I don't think they can really meet the moment a lot of the time. Like, I like Excalibur. I think he's a good announcer. But when it's like, chips are down and you're like in the heat of an emotional main event, I think he struggles to rise to meet that in the way like a Mike Tenay does here, almost effortlessly. And like, Don West is obviously through the ceiling.
Yeah, I understand that. It can be the hottest thing going on in an AEW ring, and like Excalibur's voice comes up, but he is still concentrating on calling every move accurately.
Yeah. Whereas Tenay wants to get the emotion of the moment. Yes. He's like, you are damn right, this is awesome. Yes. Like, he is into it.
As we've discussed, Don West is nothing but emotion and into it at this point in TNA.
Like, he's so good. He's the best.
Yeah, I think this is the year where he really clicks and he's like, I love this product. I love pro wrestling. I love my job.
And the thing is, it's a comfortable commentary team. It's like, it's just so easy just to watch a match and just to, it just goes in and it's just, it's not cringy. It just, it's not washing over you. You take it in and it does elevate, but it just feels comfortable.
It's also comfortable in the sense that they have a little bit of the energy of, this is your dad and his best mate.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pick which is which, but like they have that kind of like, I don't know, like friendly middle-aged man feeling about them.
Yeah.
Something else I was going to bring up. This Is Awesome was debuted in TNA. Like, that's a TNA original chant.
Yeah, it's a TNA chant. Yeah. In the same way that like Fight Forever is an NXT chant, like This Is Awesome is a TNA chant. Because TNA used to sell like foam hands with This Is Awesome and everything on it. So they used to like actively market it. Mm. But like it's like an 2004-2005 thing. I'd have to actually dig into when exactly it started picking up. But this is a relatively new chant in this era.
Yeah. Joe kills AJ with the Manhattan Drop, flying kick, senton combo. But Styles kicks out. Daniels is back in, catches one of the knees Joe is trying to throw at his head and hoists him up into the Death Valley driver. As something Mark alluded to earlier, Styles and Daniels end up on the floor and do a complex series of dodges and reversals to get in position for Joe to basically 7-10 split them with a tornado tope. That thing coming at you must be a terrifying sight. Like Samoa Joe spinning at you from just above head height. What the fuck? Knowing he's only going to come down.
I do appreciate that they're not looking at Joe either as he does it.
No.
Because Daniels does like side eye him just to see where he is. But they are looking at each other and throwing punches at each other. And then Joe absolutely murders both of them.
One of my pet peeves in wrestling is someone standing around arms open waiting for a dive. And then probably not catching them anyway.
Yes.
Like we went through years and years and years of people being able to just turn around at the right moment to catch a dive. Mm. You know how they do it in Dragon Gate? The guy doing the dive yells the name of the guy he's jumping on.
Really?
Yes. Do that. Just turn around when you hear your name and open your arms. It's not difficult. Back inside, Daniels goes to the ice to get out the muscle buster. AJ climbs up to the top with him where they fight, but Joe's like, nah, fuck these two. And from the middle rope, just backdrops them both back into the ring.
What I love with this is it's just so natural. It's not actual. I won't go for an actual move. It's just... I'm just going to get these two onto the mat. And it just works perfectly for that.
That was going to be my same. It's almost inelegant in how he throws them. He literally just grabs both men's legs and hurls them overhead. He's not doing a move. He's not doing a suplex. It's just, I am strong and I will throw you.
Yes.
But it's better than if he was doing a legit like double superplex. It's better like this.
Joe and AJ trade strike rushes with some of Joe's slaps looking and sounding pretty heavy.
Every single Joe strike in this match, you're just like, oh, good Lord. Because there's at least like 15 Joe kicks as well.
Yeah.
All of which just have that sound that you wince at. It's like, oh.
It's the sound of a watermelon being hit with a stake, isn't it?
Like that and every time AJ fires up is like two of my favorite things about this match. Because AJ firing up, he just has that visceral quality to him.
Yeah.
It's like pure raw babyface fire that I think is a bit of a lost art as well. And then Joe like kicking people without slapping his leg because he's just kicking people because it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it was lost in the early days of TNA because Russo kept insisting, let's make AJ a heel.
It's bizarre.
All right, we're not here to talk about that. Let's keep that man's name out of your mouth, please. Styles misses a leaping spin kick. Joe plants him with this German suplex where he basically lifts him straight up and then runs out from underneath him. Love that technique.
What I loved with that was it was a really nice flowing strike exchange. It was none of this to me, to you, one to the other. It was one guy has the advantage of someone. Mm-hmm. The other guy comes back. They both go for big moves, but Joe has enough common sense to duck AJ and then get the German in.
Knowing how much you like it, Mark, you'll never guess what they've put in WWE 2K24.
What, as a fucking move?
Strike exchange mini game.
Oh, fuck that for a game of soldiers.
Press X at the right point to do a forearm back to your opponent, and you can keep it going. Yeah.
God. Can someone just create a wrestler and just do both Chuckle Brothers? Fuck's sake.
Muscle buster on Styles, but as Joe is going for the choke, Daniels runs in with the belt. Joe sees it coming though and snap power slams him. Joe wins a tug of war with the ref over the belt, and Daniels quickly capitalizes to kick it directly into Joe's face. AJ wins a forearm battle with Daniels, elbows his way out of a waist lock, but sprints out of the ropes into a blue thunder for a near fall. Daniels spikes AJ with an uranage, like it's high up on the shoulders, and hits. I mean, it's called best moonsault ever for a reason. It is the prettiest moonsault, like halfway across the ring as well. But Joe dives in to break up the pin. Daniels sits up. Joe kicks him in the chest. Daniels goes back, snaps back for the cell, and possibly because he had no choice because it's Samoa Joe kicking him. And the back of his head smashes AJ Styles in the side of the face, who is still on the mat.
I had to
watch it several times and in slow motion, but we were very close to, do you know the bit in the Thunder Queen battle where Aja Kong like breaks up a pin so hard she cuts open both people? It was almost that again. As Styles looks understandably dazed, Daniels gets back into it with a jawbreaker and the last rights, but the rolling momentum from the move sends Joe out under the bottom rope. And Daniels, who's been selling the effort for the second time in the match, turns around and wonders what the hell has happened because the man he was turning around to pin is no longer in front of him.
Daniels is so good as being that kind of center logical linchpin of the match, and his reactions and his character work and his mild heel elements to sort of help it all hang together.
We talked about, when we talked about the America's Most Wanted cage match, we talked about him being the glue in that, holding it together. We talked about him in the run-up to that match, holding together the last man, is it the last man standing elimination match where his partner gets concussed?
Oh, yeah.
Absolute disaster of a match at Victory Road 2004, yeah.
Yeah. he's just good at this. Speaking of which, under audible instructions from Christopher Daniels, Styles hits the moonsault DDT for a near fall and then goes up to the top. Daniels cuts him off with a huge superplex that takes the wind out of both of them, allowing the exhausted Joe to crawl back onto the scene, and he gets the choice of people to pin, but they both kick out when he tries. Joe does the powerbomb kick out SDF onto Daniels, and you have never seen or heard anyone talk more in an SDF than Christopher Daniels does at this moment. He is verbose.
It's worth noting, the finish was meant to be when Joe came in with the belt. That was meant to be the finish.
Yes.
So they went to the finish, or sorry, Daniels technically came in with the belt and Joe took it from him. But that when the belt is introduced in the match was meant to be the finish. So everything in the 5 to 7 minutes after that was improvised. And if you know that, you can very much hear it.
Yeah.
And even if you don't know that, you can still very much hear it.
I was going to bring it up. Like I had heard recently, like they had essentially done everything they were going to do within 10 minutes and the ref was like, you still have 10 to go.
Yeah. Oh, is that why?
The second half of this match is called on the fly.
Yeah, everything after the belt is introduced is called on the fly.
Crazy. CD reaches the ropes to get out of the STF. So Joe goes back and forth between his two opponents with strikes until Styles catches him right on the top of the head with the Pele kick. hurks him up into a torture rack, which I had to write in capital letters.
Which he begins to lose and then hulks him back up onto his shoulders. Yes. He is a superhuman human being. I don't understand how he can do that.
I can imagine the AJ Styles of today looking at the shape of him now, where he is more shaped like Samoa Joe being able to do this. But like, he was not that shape in 2005.
It's insane, because as like you see Joe slipping and you're like, oh no, and AJ's like, fuck, he's not, I'm not losing this man.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
back up he comes.
Yeah. And then to make sure he doesn't lose him again, spins out into a powerbomb for a two count.
And I love the cover on that, just the, I'm just going to put all my weight on top of you.
Yeah. Now recovered, Daniels body slams AJ onto Joe, kicks Joe out of the ring. AJ slips out of a suplex and counters Daniel's lariat into this beautiful crucifix into a sunset flip into the Styles Clash, and then rolls it over into the pin as well. But again, Joe dives back into the ring to break it up. Joe throws AJ out of one side of the ring and charges Daniels, who is on the opposite side. Daniels moves and Joe takes a header to the floor. Styles rolls back in, some blows are traded, but Daniels cuts AJ's flurry off with a thumb to the eye and then stuffs a whip reversal with a knee to the gut. He hooks the arms for the angel's wings and lifts, but AJ reverses the momentum, plants his feet and bridges back and scores the pin to win the title.
Which Daniels sells brilliantly, by the way. Yes. He comes back up shocked that he got caught like that.
He is beside, like the crowd are going crazy. He's beside himself. Somehow Styles is bleeding from the nose and you get a shot of Joe on the outside absolutely raging that this has happened while he was incapacitated. Mike Tenay then barely has enough time to plug that they'll be back for Bound for Glory in a month before they go off the air.
And even like Tenay with a passion in his voice, he's like, can we top this?
Yes.
We're gonna do our damnedest at Bound for Glory. It's like, oh, he's already taken the fucking victory lap, you know? He's like, I know how good that was and we have 30 seconds to victory lap over it, and by God, I'm doing it.
I think I know the answer. Do you agree with him?
Well, they didn't top it at Bound for Glory, so...
No.
Well...
did you think this deserves its place this high up the list? Like, so this is, like, number 8 on our list of must-see matches. Like, they got that many nominations.
Yeah, because I do think it does... You sense it losing a little bit of the steam in the period that they called on the fly, which is impressive in a way that, like, the match doesn't completely fall apart when they have to fill... I think it is, like, another 7 minutes or so that they have to tack onto the end to keep this thing going. And, like, there's some awesome stuff in that 7 minutes, like the Styles Clash you mentioned and, like, the Styles Torture Rack Bomb stuff. Like, there is some great stuff in that last few minutes. But, like, the pacing of the match up until, like, the Joe dive, I think... is like spectacular. It's perfect. And then it does come down a little bit for the closing stretch, which is a bit of a shame, which takes it from like best match ever to nearly best match ever, I think, on my tier for me personally. Like, I've always said, I think I prefer the Turning Point 2009 match, which has, I think, more even pacing. And also, if you watch that match with the context of the other match, there's a bunch of callbacks where like, they do a callback to the monkey flip Hurricane Rana spot, where this time Joe power bombs him onto to Daniels. And so there's like a bunch of stuff that plays off the history of the matches and the Turning Point matches that I think elevates that a little bit. But like, it is... undeniably the most famous match in TNA history. Like, it stood head and shoulders above, I think, even like Triple X AMW, which for me I've always preferred. It's certainly not nearly as famous. I think it has significantly more historical import, as we talked about at the very start, in terms of like three guys of this level main eventing a show like this. Then you look at what like Daniels went on to do, but then more so AJ went on to do and Joe went on to do, and Joe's still AEW world champion right now as we record this, which is crazy.
And so, if you want to add to the legacy, this is famously the match that made Will Ospreay want to become a wrestler after seeing it on the Wrestling Channel.
Yeah, so if you were like, is this one of the most important matches in wrestling history that you have to see? It kind of is. I think it's pretty undeniably is.
Mark, how about you?
Quickly to jump on to Garrett's point about the Turning Point match. After knowing his position on that match versus this one and seeing a few other people I know say they prefer the Turning Point one, I went back and watched it. I'd need to watch it again before I'd say which of the two I prefer. But that is a slicker match, and it definitely has a much more satisfying finish, which makes a lot of sense when you realize that this was called on the fly. Because literally 5 minutes ago was the first time I'd heard that. I didn't know that the end of this match was called on the fly.
It's one of those things, like, if you don't know and you can't hear Christopher Daniels, you would have no idea, I don't think.
I mean, I could definitely see him calling more spots, and I'm usually terrible for spotting spot calling. Even I can pick that up. But yeah, you're right. So personally, I think this is a fantastic freeway match. And I say this as someone that hates freeway matches. Because for me, the problem is a freeway always feels like less than if you'd just done a singles match with two of the three. How often does a freeway match exceed what you were hoping for with the two best members of the match in a singles match with the same amount of time? And I think this is one of the rare occasions where it does exceed the singles match because of how well these guys work together, because of the dynamics that they're displaying, because of the character elements, because you've got Daniels being the glue, you've got Styles bringing his athleticism, his professionalism, his execution, you've got Joe just being the sheer force of nature that is Samoa Joe in 2004, 2005. As Garrett pointed out, the pace and the execution in the actual planned out bit at the start, the first 12 minutes, absolutely amazing, fantastic stuff. So yeah, it's just a match that sticks out. It's like, it's well executed. It's what many people see of as the peak of TNA, or at the very least, the time that a lot of people first saw TNA is when TNA was making that first impression.
Yes. And that was kind of why I made the point about it being like available contemporaneously on the wrestling channel over here. Like the UK people might not realize what a big market for TNA the UK was for many years.
Oh, also, this was the last match before TNA was on Spike. They went dark for a few weeks on TV, and the next thing for TNA was the Spike TV debut. So, like, if you wanted anything to create, like, a mission statement heading into the Spike TV debut, or your debut on national television, real national television, FSN doesn't count, like, for like, real, honest-to-goodness, a national television spot, that the biggest show in the company history coming up for that first Spike TV episode, like, this is the mission statement. Like, this is what we are. This is what makes us special. This is what makes us different. That's why you should watch at night on a Saturday on Spike TV.
And this was 2005. 2005 just feels like a magic year for pro wrestling, as summed up by the fact that no other year has as many matches that we've covered on the Musty Matches podcast. Seven matches from 2005 that we've covered on a podcast, and we're not talking all from one promotion. We're talking TNA, Noah, Ring of Honor, IWA Mid-South, know what match that is. WWE, even Futen of all places. Daisuke Ikeda's little, your wife gives you some money to just go away, put on a wrestling show and get out of my hair.
You were talking about the three-way match quality of it. It stands out because it is a three-way match. Yeah. It is not like a three-way match worked like most three-way matches are, where for 95% of the match you have two in and one out. That's the inverse for this match. Like all three men are in the ring for the vast, vast majority of this match, often interacting at the same time. So that's what makes like this if you're saying, what's a three-way match as a piece of art? What makes it different from a singles match? What makes it like worthwhile as a thing to do in professional wrestling? I think this is a great example of that, because it is three men interacting throughout nearly the entirety of the match.
Yeah, we have people on our Discord saying like one of their favorite matches ever, like this is the template for three-way matches going forward, and it really, really was. I also watched Turning Point 2009 last night, because TNA have put it up both as the full show and just this match on the YouTube channel.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. And I think I can see Garrett's point that match is mechanically better. They have also had an additional 4 years to come up with cool stuff. I think that is the match this would have been had everything gone entirely to plan. It's also about the only time you'll catch AJ Styles saying fuck after he hurts his hand on Joe's head, which made me laugh. It's better than the other F word he likes using. But this match, the one we're talking about today, this is the one that has the heart and the feeling to it, I think.
Because when I was talking about the start, is like this is the culmination of like a year of story around these three guys, and we'll continue on. The other one is the exact opposite. It is we're just going to do Styles Daniels Joe because it's cool. Like that's why they go back to it in 2009, and which is cool, but it doesn't have the same like built-in character stuff that we mentioned at the start that elevates it beyond just a cool wrestling match with cool moves.
Yeah, the other thing that you mentioned was you're right. Around this time, three ways really were just two in, one out, and I was like, I remember WCW's first attempts at three-way matches where one guy had to wait on the apron to get tagged in because they experienced professional wrestlers couldn't figure out how to wrestle a three-way at once, you know? I think people make much more of an effort in a three-way now, and they've become more standard within the world of wrestling, and that makes this one less special in terms of the action. But the logic, the effort, the crowd, to see what was special about TNA at the time, and to see the wellspring for people actually figuring out how to have compelling three-way matches, I think that makes this must-see. I nominated this without thinking about it. This was one of my instinct picks for the list as soon as it came up. I think it's a bit of a time capsule, and it's not the match I had in my head when I nominated it, but I still think it's must-see as a time capsule to see what was exciting about TNA at this point, to see where AJ Styles and Samoa Joe had come from. As we mentioned, they're still wrestling, and so is Christopher Daniels, although more sporadically than the other two. And to see him be a proper ring general holding together a pay-per-view main event for 10 minutes and keeping the crowd up for those 10 minutes until they can manufacture a new finish. I use this analogy a lot. I now think at the time it was mega, mega exciting and like almost futuristic. Now I think of it in terms of like a classic movie, in that I feel that it has dated in some ways. However, it's like Halloween. Like if you watch Halloween, you think this is the most cliche thing I've ever seen in my life. All horror movie cliches are in it. This is where they all came from. And I kind of think of this match in the same way as that. So I'm standing by my pick. Like this is still a must-see match for me.
Like Styles and Joe get all the credit in the world. Like they don't need more celebrating. I think they're widely and correctly considered two of the best of the last 20 years. Daniels isn't on their level. I will never make a claim that Daniels is on their level. But I think Daniels almost like slips into historically underrated as like the third guy. When you watch him in his best matches and you see him doing something that is so different. Like he is so different from AJ and Joe, and he holds a lot of these things together because he has such a good wrestling brain, and he is the most compelling character of the three, that he brings something different. And like, I don't think he gets celebrated enough.
No, but he's one of those people who like at any point in the last 20 years, had I won the lottery and set up a wrestling promotion, he would have been my first dozen phone calls in the ring and behind the scenes. Because I think he's like, I've dealt with him within wrestling and very slightly outside of wrestling as well. And he is super smart and super switched on and able to like give you a great promo with like 30 seconds notice. Always performs in the ring. Like he may be the third of the three in terms of ability and the spectacular nature of what he does, but actually actively bad Christopher Daniels matches are very few and far between, I think. He's an Ishii. He's a high floor guy.
Yeah, AJ and Joe, they're the light. They're the thing you see. Daniels is the shadow. If it's not there, you notice it. You don't know what it is, but you notice it. Daniels is that guy that almost all the time he's bringing something to keep the match on the level, to keep it running, to keep it going. And yes, those guys don't always. They're not the flashy guys, but they're so important for pro wrestling, both for keeping a product going, for giving you something reliable when people are trying a bit too much, and also for helping those guys on the come up learn and helping the talented guys learn the gaps. You need people like Christopher Daniels in professional wrestling. Even if Daniels isn't like star potential, even if he doesn't stand out, you need that kind of wrestler in your company.
It should be noted, Christopher Daniels had been wrestling already for 12 years at this point. So he knows what he's doing.
It shows.
Yeah, there are two like real formative wrestlers in building AJ into who he is. One is Jerry Lynn and one is Christopher Daniels.
Yeah.
And without those men, you don't get AJ.
No. In the Observer post-pay-per-view poll, all 114 people who nominated a best match for this show nominated this. No other match got a single vote.
Abyss and Sabu were robbed. That match actually did rock too.
Dave called it one of the best matches of the last decade in North America, and to that point, one of the best match. Oh, sorry, no, the best match in TNA history. 5 stars in the Observer. In fact, the only 5-star TNA match until Will Ospreay versus Josh Alexander in January of this year, which got 5.5. 9.66 on Cage Match. In the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards, this came 4th in Match of the Year behind, stop me if you heard these before, Kenta Kobashi versus Samoa Joe, episode 86, Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels, episode 50, and Kenta Kobashi versus Kensuke Sasaki, episode 78. Senshu Suzuki.
Can you imagine the year where this finishes 4th?
Right? That's why I listed off those matches. Like, this 2005 is an incredible year for wrestling. Daniels also has 2 other matches in the top 10, including the cage match we talked about last time you were on. Episode 31.
Because, yeah, that was when the Observer Awards were December to November, what is it? Yeah.
I think they've always been December to November.
No, I think he changed it to annually in like the last 5 or 6 years or something like that.
Joe won Best Brawler, Most Outstanding, and came 2nd in Wrestler of the Year to Kenta Kobashi. AJ was Best Flyer, and rounding out the TNA Awards, Mike Tenay won Best Commentator for 2005.
His 3rd year out of 4, I think he wins again in 06. So. And that was like this, not that Jim Ross was peak Jim Ross, but Jim Ross was good in this era, and Mike Tenay was beating him every year.
Yeah.
And then Don West getting absolutely no credit because people are stupid and dumb.
I did look. Don West came 10th in Commentator of the Year. So, hey, some people voted for him. Some
guarantee
people could
he finished higher and worse announcer, though, if you look. Infuriating.
Garrett, is there anything else we need to hit on with this match before we wrap it up and take it home?
I think we can wrap it up and take it home. Like, what more is there to say about this match? Like, it has, as you said, not just because like the Dave Meltzer 5-star of it all is kind of part of the match's mystique, as you said, until Will Ospreay came along, the scale breaker himself came along.
Yeah,
which is such a fun little thing that like this is the match that inspired him to be a wrestler, and there wasn't another TNA 5-star match until he had a match in TNA. It's like that is such a fun piece of symmetry. It's like the match that inspired him, and then he topped it in theory in the Dave scale. At least nearly 20 years later. Oh god, I'm so old.
I'm older.
Oh, this match was nearly 20 years ago. Oh dear. Like, what do you think about that? Like, oh, a match in 2005 when you think like WrestleMania 1 happened 20 years before this match, and now we're nearly 20 years on from this. You're like, oh.
When this happened, I was already 26. I am only a couple of months younger than Samoa Joe.
Good God. So that's the note we can end on. We're all ancient and going to die.
There was one other note I wanted to ask, actually. As this is our last TNA match, the ones that we have talked about on the podcast are this, the AMW Triple X cage match that you came on and discussed before, and the AJ Styles Abyss cage match. Is there anything else from TNA that you or Impact or Global Force Wrestling that you think should also have been discussed? Anything you think might have missed out?
There are 3 that immediately spring to mind. First, Joe and Styles from Turning Point 2005, the end of this year, which I think is a better match than this is. Like, it is just those two with everything that you could possibly expect from those two. AJ, freak of nature athlete, and Joe absolutely murdering him at every stretch. I think like that should be there. One that's on the face, hearing the names, you would think not a goddamn hope in hell, but Kurt Angle versus Ken Anderson. Anderson from Lockdown 2010.
I'm not having anything with Ken Anderson.
Yeah, that's everybody's instinct. It's like, oh, it's fucking Ken Anderson. How could he possibly have arguably close to a 5-star match? Something about the stars aligning and Kurt Angle's willingness to moonsault off a cage on that night came together for like a borderline perfect pro wrestling match for what they went for. And then the other one is Motor City Machine Guns Beer Money, the best of three finale, I think is absolutely in the conversation for like an essential pro wrestling match.
Tremendous stuff. Thank you very much for joining us. It has been a pleasure again. Feel free to set out your stall and plug your wares.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at GarrettKidney, GarrettKidney. You can listen to me talk about TNA. We've done the full episode on Unbreakable September 2005 on You've Got to Be Kidding Me, my TNA history podcast, which you can find on your podcast platform of choice. We're up to February 2006 at the moment. So if you would like to listen to anything about TNA history from or before February 2006, that's a good place to go. Or if you want to give us money, you can just go straight to TNAchad.com and just subscribe to our Patreon for bonus content. And
it's
also
got the hat out, Mark. Stop him.
Also, Liam always gives out to me if I don't plug his Twitter on other podcast guest appearances. So at the Gleet Muta, if you would like to follow my podcast co-host Liam on Twitter.
Awesome. As for us, you can go to linktr.ee/mustymatches for all the ways subscribe, links to the full list of nominations and much more. We are at Musty Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. And we have a Discord, bit.ly/mustymatches Discord. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter, and Mark is
at Monkey_Buckles.
Mark has also been cheating on me. Tell them what you've been doing.
Yeah. So we were talking about how Chris Daniels is such an important veteran. We discussed the modern veteran, that is Pac. So I was on Alan Forrell's PW Torch VIP Pro Wrestling Paradise show for part of his 34L30 series. And we spent nearly 3 hours discussing the career of Pac. Is he one of the best high flyers of his generation? Well, yes. we discussed how much of a star maker he is. We touched on Dragon Gate. We touched on his early days in the UK. We touched on how his Ring of Honor run turned out to be an absolute disaster. Just literally everything, just chatting Pac. And if that sounds like a good time, especially with Pac seemingly on the horizon of being back, then, yeah, you would need a Torch VIP subscription for that, but the Alan Forrell shows, just binge them. Just binge them. They're great audio.
Yep. Appropriately for Pac, it's 3 hours that flew by. I really enjoyed it. I also have another show. Every month, Nothing and Like It chronicles the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance's adventures on television, including, eventually, the stuff I made. You can find everything to do with that at linktr.ee/fwapod. Episode 5, by the time you hear this, will have been recorded and will either be out or will be out soon. Next week, Squill returns to discuss the highest-ranked match from Pro Wrestling NOAH, Kenta Kobashi versus Mitsuharu Misawa from March 1st, 2003. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.